lot of time in the hallway. Good morning. Good morning. Call the House Finance Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, March 14th. Time is 8:55. Members present are Representative Newman, Representative Costello, Representative Edgman, Representative Dugan, Representative Jewell, Representative Guttenberg, Representative Wilson, Representative Guerra, Representative Fairclough, Co-Chair Stoltz, and Co-Chair Thomas. Today we're going to take up HB 284 and 285 and move them from committee. And just to let people know, the amended operating budget is $31,044,700. General funds below the governor's amended request. In all funds, we're $77,683,700 below the governor's amended request. As we've been talking about the growth of government, and I think I want to thank the committee for our efforts to slow the growth, and we know that the path is unsustainable. The agency general fund budget portion of this is 3.4% larger than the current year. We remind you that the current year was 7.8%. In total, we are investing $6.272 billion of general funds and $9.49 billion of all funds in the operating budget. So, with that, Co-Chair, can we adopt CS for HB 284?
Chairman, I'm doing the most recent CS for House Bill number 284, House Bill 284 Finance. That's version 27-GH2599/T Bailey. March 13th, 2012, is the committee's working document.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Any objections? Seeing none, CS for HB 284 has been adopted. Mr. Co-Chair, motion to move from committee.
Chairman, I move that CS for House Bill number 284 Finance, and I'll read the number again, 27-GH2599/T Bailey 31312. Move from committee with individual recommendations and this big fiscal note.
Any objections?
Just for a second, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Thank you. Just to make a point. We just haven't had a chance to review the CS. I know that folks tried to add in all the amendments the way they were written or the way they were intended, but if we find a typo before we hit the House floor, we'll just bring that to your attention.
Yes.
And I also wanted to thank Representative Fairclough. There's been a long waiting list for housing for folks who are homeless, and Representative Fairclough and the governor found some federal money that will enable us to get more housing for victims of domestic violence and also free up some of the housing for folks who are on the waiting list who aren't domestic violence victims. And I think that's a very positive move, so appreciate that.
Do I have any objection?
Oh, yeah.
I know. Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
We're going to be talking about it after comments, but unless you want to just...
No, thank you.
Okay.
That's fine.
Seeing no other objections, HB 284 moves from the committee with individual recommendations. For adoption.
I moved for the adoption of CS for House Bill number 285 Finance. That's 27-GH2593/I Bailey, March 13, 2012, is a working document to the House Finance Committee.
Seeing no objections, CS for House Bill 285 Finance has been adopted. Motion to move.
And with a very de minimis change in here for make it conferenceable, I can't remember which one it is, but I move that CS for House Bill 285 Finance, again, 27-GH2593/I Bailey, March 13, 2012, be approved by the committee with individual recommendations.
Any objection?
Again, just briefly, Mr. Co-Chair, if you could just let us know which change to make a conference below was before the floor, just so I can take a look at it, and I'm sure it's fine, but I withdraw the objection.
Okay. It's a very minor, it's to change only to make it conferenceable, and I just can't remember which one it is.
Totally understand.
Okay, comments from the committee in regards, hearing no objection, HB 285 was amended, is moved from the committee. Comments? Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is too much money. I'll be voting for it on the floor and speaking or for it against it and speaking against it. I'm not, that is not a criticism for anybody at this table or anybody who worked on that. It's just that, in my view, we have a responsibility to not do what is always done whenever there's any money, which is everything gets bid up, and then when the money goes away, everything comes down with a thump. If anybody here or anybody listening thinks that we're going to be able to sustain this level of spending, good luck to you. The last 2 years before this, I voted for the budget. And to be absolutely candid, I voted for the budget for political reasons. And I have to tell you that in 6 years, this is the thing that I regret the most. And I would, if I had it to do over again, I would not be voting for the budget. That's how strongly I feel. Frankly, I don't know what to do about this. I have no idea, really, of what to do about this. The budget creeps up no matter what we do. There are built-in increases. There's inflation. There's salary increases. There's higher costs. And all of those contribute to the run-up in the budget. And it passes, finally, for lots of different reasons. People have, they think that, they want to get some big thing done. They want to get some little thing done. People come into their offices with, perfectly good explanations for why they want more money. Frankly, there's a lot of things that go into this budget every year that I vote for. They're just good ideas, and they are part of what I think as my job, which is to, basically, part of it anyway is to spend money in a way that helps people. But the result is that the budget in the last 10 years has gone up on average, as near as I can tell, 7.8%. At that rate, in the last 10 years, we just about doubled the operating budget. And as I said, this can't go on, but, frankly, I'm not sure how we attack that. In addition to the percentage increase in the budget, according to legislative finance, the amount of money, the amount of money that we have to have coming in has gone up. In FY10, it was $64. In FY11, it was $77. In FY12, it was $94. We have to have that level of oil income to balance the budget. And, frankly, I don't know what we do when there's a trough in the budget, when we hit the magic mark where we're spending more than we've actually coming in. There's no magic here as far as I know. I don't have any. And there are people who've been working on this. I want to say especially Representative Fairclough, who's been trying to, figure out a way to do that. I wish I had been able to help more, and I don't know what the result of that's going to be. In my view, I've been watching the budget process now for 30 years, and what happens is when there's money, we spend it, and when there's not, we start trying to balance it in a different way. As the people at this table know, I'm leaving. sorry to be leaving. With the work I'm done. But, you know, I just don't know what's going to happen or when or how, for that matter. But I do know that this is unsustainable and that if we don't, actually, if you don't now, but if you, you don't rein it in, there's going to be hard times coming. That's just, you know, the math is... doesn't care. It doesn't care what we want. So I thank you for the opportunity to explain why I'm going to be voting against the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Dugan. Other comments? Representative Jewell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with a lot of what Representative Dugan has talked about in this, although I will be voting the other way on the budget. I just want to raise a couple of points. I find it sometimes pretty amazing that in the, what, how many weeks has it been since we've started session? You take out about 2 weeks since we started the operating budget process to know where we've gone over a review of some sort of our budget. And mostly, unless people have taken the time during the interim to really understand the budget process and get into it, we're dealing with the increments of the ask of the governor. And to that end, you know, I don't know that we do ourselves or the people of the state any favors when we try to jam it all into a 90-day session. So I'll stick my neck out and say that. Because I think there's a lot of people who would just assume that we're even shorter than that because the legislature doesn't seem to be doing that much. But I would disagree with that, and I think that we need I think that to be more deliberative in a public process, including of the budget, that we need extra time and to go back to the 120. Having said that, it doesn't look like 120 is going to be on our radar anytime soon. And so there are ways to deal with this budget in a 90-day session if we are willing to do the work of the budget subcommittees and committee work during the interim. And it's going to mean a further investment of time on all of our parts to accommodate that. And to that end, here's where I eventually wanted to go, Mr. Chairman, and that is your whole focus on missions and measures. We've had it in this year's process. I think it's debatable about how much emphasis we've put on it in this year, but it's there. But looking forward, Mr. Chairman, I think it begins to help us get to some of the issues that the prior speaker was talking about, if we've got the right missions, measures, strategies, and reviews in place, so that our budget reviews are based on how we're doing with the money that we're spending. And when we get to those points, then how we act as a legislature in making the funding decisions and levels that we do. So while I agree with the prior speaker, looking forward with the missions and measures, which quite frankly I wasn't totally enamored with, I think if we stay the course, it can reap some really good benefits for us. And because that will become a policy of how we do business and conduct and fund public policy decisions in our state. So for that, Mr. Chairman, I thank you for that. And I look forward, well, I'm not sure if I look forward to working during the interim on some of these things because I had the Hess budget. And believe me, I can't get my arms around that thing, let alone my head. But I think with some work, a lot of work, whether it's by this committee as a whole, whether it's by the budget subcommittees, we can begin to get a much deeper level of understanding, and I thank you for recognizing that work's going to have to be done in during the interim, and have been working with our ledge finance folks to begin that process. And now that I got off that little soapbox for a little bit, I do want to say thank you to the members of the budget subcommittees for taking the time and putting in the effort, and in particular my staff for coaching me through the process. It's been a tough slog on their part, I can tell you. And with that, I will be voting for the budget, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Jewell, other comments? Representative Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I've been able to be a member of this body for 6 years and 8 years now, the last 2 years being on finance, and to be a little bit more involved in the budget process. And I do commend what we've done the last few years with this missions and majors of really digging down. I know that we worked very hard in our office to do that on the budgets that we had. But I also realize that what is in this budget is money to try and make Alaska better so we can be more efficient in the future. Putting a new roof and more energy-efficient windows on schools and things like that to make them last longer. Better roads. There's ways where if when you've got that extra dollar in your hand to try and save $2 down the road makes sense. We always look at cost of government, price per barrel. We have to remember that the numerators and denominators on that is the price per barrel and the number of barrels going down that pipeline. Well, that number of barrels going down that pipeline is getting less and less. And we can say, well, it was $76, $85, $96. You got your cost of government, your price per barrel of oil, and your number of barrels of oil to deal with. We're getting less and less oil down there. So cost of government, your price of barrel of oil has to be higher to cover that cost. There's numerator denominators in there, and you can mix that up any way you want. As we all know numbers, you can do that. But what I do see in this budget, I mean, we all agree that there's things in here that we like, that we don't like, that we'd rather see funded or not funded. But it's a process that we go through, and it's a public process. We can do our best. I don't think that there's anybody around this table or in this body, this building, that thinks that, you know, budget increases are good, but how do you stop them? How do you stop the price of the world global market value of oil when heating and energy of your schools or buildings goes up and you have to cover those costs? Asphalt for roads. You just can't stop that. We do our best to do with what we've got. I think that there's a lot of efficiencies where we spent a couple of bucks to try and save a couple of bucks in the future. And we're preparing for those days when we don't have the money. And that's what I see a lot in this budget, too. Is it higher than I want to see? Well, I think it's higher than everybody wants to see. But sometimes you have to do today to prepare for tomorrow. And I see a lot of that work went into this budget. And I'm thankful for that. So we will be supporting it. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your work.
Other comments? Representative Stoltz. Right.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to acknowledge the folks that took the tough parts of this budget. It's pretty daunting, staggering, dealing with Hess, dealing with the university budget, which is creeping up toward $1 billion. It's still in the $900 million range. The education budget, over $1 billion. And we've got legislation in various parts of this building that would increase the formulas, and that's what's on several of those, and in just about every department. And those are things that are driving us. We talk about where we were 10 years ago. But 10 years ago, the budget would have, I think, we would have been able to fund HESS and education and not much else if we held it where we were. And those are formula programs that are driving up. I don't think anybody that was watching 3 years ago, I don't think the intrepid reporter would have said, we'll never spend $70 million on transportation costs for Medicaid patients. My God, that's a staggering number. And here we are, and that number's going up. It's only going to get more expensive. Frankly, where I come from politically, I'd like to be pushing the no on this. I read the book Game Change. It didn't resemble much the movie I saw. There was a chapter, part of a chapter was about a former politician in Alaska, but most of it was about you know, the whole presidential race, and Hillary Clinton talking a lot about the responsibility, Gene, the frustration of having to make a lot of tough, unpopular decisions. And I really felt empathetic towards her position as reading that book, because you have to make a lot of tough decisions and the unpopular ones when, because I know what it was like to live in this White House, and not comparing our role here with anything as substantial as leading the free world, but I really developed a lot of empathy toward the comparisons that she made about having to do things that weren't politically popular at the moment, and as you have that responsibility along with the power that, again, there's a lot of responsibility, and it's not fun. I don't know what we're going to price of oil is not going to be the panacea as production goes down. That's the scarier part. We have folks in the political process talking about, well, we can live on 150, the pipeline will run at 150,000 barrels. God forbid that we try to sustain a budget. I don't know how many hundreds of dollars the barrel have to be, and God forbid trying to live not only just the interior but anywhere in Alaska with energy prices like that. But hopefully that's not a scenario, but that's what the kind of prices we have to have. But I look at all the I see a lot of the internal pressures in this building from the general public. There's probably going to be more formula growth before we're done, even in this calendar year, because we've got all kinds of bills floating around that will increase formula growth and incredible public support from some sectors, and it's a lot easier to just to wave stuff by than to do something unpopular, and that nobody conscripted us to these jobs. We all volunteered and we all signed up, and so no crybaby on my part, but it's pretty daunting. And I've hit public safety and law, and now the courts. Those are easy jobs compared to what Representative Jewell and Representative Fairclough and dealing with those huge behemoth departments. I don't even know how you begin to tackle those. And the university trying to meet all the needs, and I don't think we ever saw any of those departments nearing that growth level. And it's, every employee contract, it might be 2 or 3%, but you throw each department in and then you add that on it when you're talking the thousands of employees. All those things add up in the whole compendium of spending. And you can say you're not going to do it, you fire every employee, we're still not going to get to outside of a long-term structural deficit. So it's a lot more questions and concerns and answers, but it's thank you for the people that on this that did volunteer to step up to the plate, both the minority and the majority, and did the best they could. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Stoltz. Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Representative Dugan, I think, has been incredibly consistent in his views on the budget since he's been here, and he should be applauded for that. The political thing that they do in Washington is one party just looks at the other party's thing and they tear it apart. And in politics, you see that all the time. And I suppose that would be easy if I wanted to look at something I believed in but tear it apart because it was led by the other party. And I've never done that in this building. So I'm going to vote for this budget because I think it moves the state forward. There are parts of the budget that don't thrill me that much. We did some amendments the other day. There are parts of the budget that I like. But in the end, the difficulty of cutting the budget is goes back to an example I know of a young man up from the valley who had a friend who called me one day and said he had cystic fibrosis. The state was one of the few states in the country that didn't cover lung transplants for people who had cystic fibrosis, and he was going to die. And his only choice was to move away from his family to go get the lung transplant in one of the other states that provided it. And we called the commissioner and said, why are we one of the states that doesn't provide lung transplants to somebody with cystic fibrosis? That's what somebody who has that condition will need at some point in their life. And he said, yeah, I think this is absurd, and he changed the rule. And there's a lot in this budget that pays for things that you can't, with a conscience, not pay for. So those are the things you can't take out of the budget. And then you get to the limited things that you can take out of the budget. And, you know, many of us try amendments, and frankly, those wouldn't radically rewrite the budget. It's hard to find the major, major, major changes without just slashing and burning. One thing that you can do that the legislature can't do is go into the agencies and say, are you operating your agency efficiently? Is everybody in this department needed? And sitting in the legislature, we can't go in those agencies and know that. That's something the governor has to do. And, you know, it's not easy for the governor, but those are the governor's employees. That's one way to get control of the budget, is to go through agency, and have the executive do that and delete duplicative or unnecessary work. But, you know, there are things in the budget that I think make things a lot better. As Representative Newman said, we're spending money to save money over the long term in the weatherization program. And I always get mixed up the other part of the weatherization program that's not the weatherization program.
Energy rebate.
Energy rebate. Thank you. That's going to save the state money over the long term. It costs money now to save more money later. I think that's one of the smartest things the state's ever done. And we probably, I would be surprised if there was another state in the country that does as good a job as we do on that. There are things in the budget. We have differences of opinion on some of the education issues, but we've moved the state slightly forward on pre-K education. And how can I vote against a budget that does that? You know, do I want to go further ahead than that? Yes. Do other people want to not? Yes. And folks are able to reach a compromise. I think we've created opportunity for youth who don't have opportunity in the foster care arena by providing more job training to them, so it's cheaper for us in the long term to have youth work rather than be in jail, which costs $40,000 to $50,000 to $60,000 a year. So we've done some smart things in the budget, a lot of smart things in the budget. What I said that Representative Fairclough and the governor worked on is a smart thing in the budget. They leveraged federal funds to reduce the housing waiting list for homeless people and victims of domestic violence. So the one unpopular thing that I'll say that will probably make me bear the wrath of Democrats and Republicans is you can't take out lung transplants. I mean, but at some point the state can't afford to, in the capital budget, pay for things like city roads in the wealthiest cities in the state. I mean, those at some point have to become the city's responsibilities again. We have to spread the wealth around the state, especially to smaller communities, but there are savings there where, you know, sometimes I feel like, as an urban person, I don't like this. Sometimes I feel like in order to give something to a rural area, we have to get something in an urban area, and I don't like that kind of budgeting. I, at some point, feel like my city should pay for its city streets. And we might not have the luxury to have the state pay for city streets that much longer. Those are places where I think there's a lot to be saved. But I think, you know, a 4% general fund increase is roughly the rate of inflation and population increase in the state. It's somewhat a status quo budget, but it does things that will make life better, that will create opportunity for people. And I think we'll all have to struggle on figuring out where to find the big belt tightening that's going to be needed. But I think some of it's going to have to be in the capital budget, especially in the bigger cities where we're funding city services. Thank you.
Thank you. Just for the info, people online waiting for HB 250, we're going to hear it this afternoon. We're rewriting the fiscal note on that one. So anybody in the audience also waiting for HB 250, we probably should have announced earlier, but... So, anybody, any other comments? You made yours last night. Double dipping. Early last night. Make it short, okay. Double dipping here.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to give credit where credit is due. Even though I was responsible for chairing the revenues budget, AHFC, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, came up with a way and proposed that in cooperation with the governor's office to make a program existing already in the state of Alaska for housing available. And so we had the honor of looking at that proposal and working with the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, the Alaska Network of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, to make sure that women and families that are affected, women, men, and children that are affected by domestic violence can find housing under a different route and not take so much of that particular funding allocation. So credit where credit is due, the administration made that, and we had the privilege of being able to exercise it to make sure that it would meet the needs of families that are affected by violence. So just wanted to put that on the record, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll make closing comments since we can talk all day long. I want to thank all the committee representatives.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, thank you. You know, being involved in this process, not just in this room, but in this building, is in many ways wrestling with a giant beast. You know, each of us has a role and a responsibility and a piece of that. And you, Mr. Chairman, have the biggest part of that in this room. The external pressures and the internal pressures, and each of us have our constituency that want a piece of it or want to change something. And when you go through that process, for me, one of the things I realize is I'm sorry, is how young of a state we are. We're one generation away from our constitutional signers. And all the needs of a young state, all the infrastructure needs, all the gaps that we have, whether it's something like rare earth elements or the ag side of the state or the needs of the children in the state. But it's difficult. But one of the things that I constantly wrestle with is, and I don't sit on the HES subcommittee, but I am a participant in it in many ways, is the growing cost of medicine and pharmaceuticals and all the associated things. In addition to that, the administration of those things. And I've asked around, and I've had some bills over the years to try and wrestle that down, and it is a giant beast. And we see what happens in Washington, D.C., when in the nation's capital, when they try to get a hold of it, all the different constituents that pile on and grab and pull. But the cost of health care, not just, I mean, when we grab it, the part that we're looking at is eligibility, trying to change eligibility, trying to narrow it down and narrow the focus down. But the administration of health care costs and the cost of health care itself is something that at some point somebody's going to have to address and deal with. But we're a young state. I think you guys have done a great job, and the subcommittee chairman as well. Because, you know, I look around, and oftentimes when I'm doing putting pressure or trying to exert influence someplace, it's like, what would I do from the other side? What would it look like for me? What can I make it easier to deal with? You know, as I'm going forward and talking to somebody about something, it's a giant beast in it. You know, this is the sausage making room. You know, and I think we've gotten through this with a lot of respect for each other. So I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments before I make my final? Before we, let's, you want to make that motion for
Mr. Chairman, just. We've got a new CS. They're going to reprint this. And I just want to make the same global motion that the Legislative Finance Division and the Legal Services Division be authorized to make the conforming technical amendments to the final draft before it reaches on the floor. And for both, and that motion is for both the House Finance Committee substitute for House 284 and 285.
Seeing no objection, motion carries. My final, not final, final, huh? I just want to thank the committee. I know that we went in and changed and revamped the process, but I found in just for your information, once the finance director for the departments found out where we were headed, each meeting we had was a lot easier because they had the agenda. We had one agenda that went out, and they were ready for it. And so as it went on, it got easier and easier. So I think, you know, eventually this thing will work out, and it'll be much easier than trying to run all over the place with, you know, like for the last 6 years I've been involved in this process. I want to thank all the members here that chaired the subcommittees. It's a lot of work. I know that, you know, people coming to you, that I want this, I want that, you know, and it's hard to say no. I went home this last weekend, and I tell people, you know, I've always liked to help people, but I said, there's a time now where I have to say no. And it's decisions I don't like to make, but somebody has to make them. So, and I'm going to share that with you guys because you had to make decisions and saying no to this budget could be bigger. And we're going to get a lot of heat for doing things that we probably should have done, but we're saying, hey, give us a break. You know, we're trying to, you know, look forward and get a few more years out of what we have coming in. And I want to thank the David Teal and Amanda Ryder and their staff. And I want to remind people, too, in the middle of this process, we also put out a supplemental. We put extra strain on David and Amanda, the finance people, and people here. I mean, it was somewhat stressful here a while back trying to juggle all these things together, but we made it through there. And I want to thank all you guys for doing that. Thank Pete and Joan, who helped coach everybody through here and you know, going through the revamp process, again, doing the lunch, the supplemental in the middle of this process, and telling me to cool it, and you're spending too much money. My conscience over there, to slow down. And anyway, I think I'm not going to belabor the thing much longer. This one comment. Representative Senator Hensley spoke to us in the House floor the other day, and he said, remember our operating budget was $100 million in 1966. Now you're talking, let's see what the inflation number has been at now that we're at $9.6 billion. You know, he was just amazed. But, and you look, I was growing up back then. I went through high school. And, you know, the roads were plowed, you know, everything was happening. But it's amazing. So I want to thank everybody for working on this budget and the administration. You guys were wonderful to work with. I think you did a good job. You know, I tell people, you know, you came in with amendments I couldn't say no to because it made sense. You know, if they make sense, then you have to adopt them. And then to balance things at the end there. So with that,
We've already moved it,
so yeah. We'll take a brief and ease, and then we'll bring up, turn over to the co-chair Stoltz, so with that we'll take a brief and ease.
Back to order after a brief recess. It's we're back at same day. It is 9:43. These glasses are not doing as well as they did here. Thank you. We have, as previously announced by Co-Chair Thomas, we're still working on some fiscal note issues on House Bill 250. That will come back hopefully as early as this afternoon or whenever we get that resolved. We have before us House Bill 358, just as a formality. The bill is unchanged from its original introduction. We'll adopt that as this committee's working document.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move before the committee House Bill 358-27-LS1406-M.
Any objection? Hearing none, the original bill is before us. Representative Pruitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate yourself and the members of the committee hearing me today. For the record, Lance Pruitt, I am the representative for House District 21. Today I'm here to present House Bill 358, which is an advertising campaign in support of opening the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, or ANWR, for development. I know you guys have obviously a busy schedule, so I really appreciate the taking this time to hear this important piece of legislation, I think, for the state. What this would do is it would direct the state to contract with a qualified trade organization to advertise opening the coastal plain of ANWR for oil and gas exploration as well as development. Of course, ANILCA, we all know, in 1980 prohibited the leasing or other development that would lead to production of oil and gas from taking place up in ANWR. And today, domestic demand for oil, it continues to rise while we continue to bring additional sources from outside. New technology has greatly improved the environmental impact, and I think that's why this is key, is communicating the environmental impact. If we were to build Prudhoe today, we'd actually be able to do it in something as small as 1,526 acres. Significantly smaller than what we would have done years ago, and I think that's part of what we need to communicate to people. Oil and gas development is also proven it can coexist in the Arctic of Alaska. Central caribou herd, another misperception outside of Alaska, has actually been increasing. It has had the numbers are much higher than when we started developing, and I think that's something that we need to get out and make sure that message is known. Of course, with state revenue depending on resource development, it only makes sense for us to promote responsible development to the maximum benefit of Alaskans. And if you would, I'll have Dirk just hit really briefly on a couple of the items within the bill, but we'll have any questions after that, if that's okay.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record.
Dirk Krastaff, Representative Lance Pruitt, and in the interest of time, I'll take any questions on any parts of the bill you might have. And just so you know, this legislation's been modeled directly after the state's tourism marketing contract statute in AS 4433-125.
You don't watch the committee very often.
Yeah.
Too busy in other things. Questions, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have an amount that you're thinking in the first year that you would need to put forth to make it effective?
Here's what we expect from this, through the Chair, Representative Wilson. It's a qualified trade organization, which could be anyone from, and of course we've got in here some letters of support from the Alliance and from the State Chamber. They're the ones that are going to determine that. Because whatever they're able to bring to the table is what we would then match. Now, the Alliance and the State Chamber, those are small producers, those are mom and pops. You know, I really don't expect much more than maybe $500,000 from them. If someone like AOGA were to step in, it'd be a larger amount. And, of course, they've got a lot of different dynamics, and I haven't really heard, and I don't have a lot of support from them. So I really expect it to be a smaller amount. I expect it to be somewhere probably below $1 million that we would be working with in the first year.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pruitt, it seems reasonable. It seems reasonable to sort of set the record straight so that we have a rational debate on Anwar. What I think would worry me, and I don't have an amendment ready, I want to speak to you about it. What I think would worry me would be something that might get some folks a short-term advantage but give Alaska a long-term disadvantage. And that would be if the ads that were taken out targeted particular candidates in the lower 48. I mean, on one hand, let's say I'm a Republican, I would love to win more Republican seats in the lower 48, or I'm a Democrat, I'd love to win more Democratic seats in the lower 48. That would be like the short-term benefit. But the long-term damage would be those people would hate us for interfering with their politics. And those candidates who survived those elections would, till their deathbed, make sure Anwar never got open. And their friends in Congress would, to their deathbed, make sure Anwar never got open. So I'll talk to you afterwards, but I'm hoping you might be amenable to an amendment that said, look, this is to set the record straight in the lower 48, to provide accurate information so people really understand the issue, but it shouldn't be used to target candidates. And, you know, frankly, there are Democratic and Republican candidates out there who are opposed to opening Anwar. In part, it's regional. But I don't know how you would feel about that, but I think that would set us back if we did that. That would be like Alaska interfering with other states' politics, which would not be received any better than other states interfering in Alaska's politics.
Through the chair, Representative Garrett. Yeah, I appreciate that, and definitely be willing to talk. The intent is obviously not to influence the political, go after a specific candidate. It is an opportunity. I do see it, though, as an opportunity to address the constituencies of people that might be on the fence there, to make sure that they're clear. It's not to say, hey, support so-and-so because of whatnot and get into almost being a third party, but it is if let's say there's someone, this summer we're going to have Senator Murkowski, she's going to bring up a group to Anwar, she's going to try to show them, you know, what's there. When that person goes back, those people go back, we want to make sure that when they get back to their constituencies, the constituencies don't attack them like they did back in the 90s when we did get it through both the House and the Senate. That they don't go back with misinformation and attack them saying, hey, you can't do this because people of Alaska don't want it, they're killing the caribou, and all of those things. We can definitely talk about it, but, obviously it's not the intent to say don't vote for so-and-so because they disagree with Anwar. It's to just make sure that there's correct information to the people of outside of Alaska.
Mm-hmm. And I appreciate Representative Garrett's point, because that's a position I have on whether local government should be spending money on initiatives and referendums, and that's been a consistent point with me. And not only I think is it counterproductive, I think it's morally wrong. We have state statutes that prohibit state money being used on referendums. I think it's very consistent policy, and if we can work out, I'd like to, if it's the will of the committee, move it out, and I think it shouldn't be very hard, you two working together, to craft something. I think it's consistent with state policy, and I think it's the right thing to assert, and it would clear up a lot of things.
I agree, Representative Stoltz, and of course we already have in here that you can't use the money to lobby states and local municipalities. So it goes right along with that same concept. So
that's I'm sure we can craft that. Representative Costello, Newman, and then Dugan.
Thank you, through the chair. Representative Pruitt, I'm just trying to understand the logistics of the bill. So what it does is it would bring in proposals from organizations, and then at that point the state would identify the winning proposal as the QTA, and after that we would then come in and match. Can you explain how that works and how that money will be raised in the private sector?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Costello, what will take place is the Trade Association will, of course, this will be determined by the Department of Commerce. Trade Association will say, hey, we've got X amount of money that they can come up with. It, and it, it's really up to the trade association how they want to come up with that, and they'll approach the Department of Commerce, who will then make the contract with them to go ahead and go forward with the marketing campaign. How they'll get that money, it could be just from donations from their members, it could be from donations from outside. That's really up to the trade association, which is one of the reasons why I kind of like this idea. So it brings in that money from industry and from the private sector, but it's really on them to figure out how to do that. It's not on the state in any way. And they will appropriate the money to match that, and they'll go forward with the trade association will go forward, though, with the actual marketing campaign on approval of the Department of Commerce. Another piece that I'll just make sure that we put in there, the ownership of that marketing campaign is shared jointly by the trade association and the state. So the state gets something out of this in the end, too, whether it's a trademark or whatnot that's created.
Through the chair, so when you were coming up with this legislation, did you consider setting actually identifying the amount for the campaign? I mean, it's not a new idea to do marketing campaigns. I'm curious why that was left unanswered.
Yeah. Through the chair, Representative Costello, one of the reasons, because I don't want to put a limit on those guys. This is a marketing, this is a tool to market our resources to potentially bring more money into the state. And if there's someone that wants to put $50 million in a year, I think we should celebrate that, jump up and down, because that's a significant amount of money promoting Alaska. There's definitely people out there that are especially when it comes to ANWR, they're saying, let's shut that down. And they're spending a lot more than we're even going to with this by considerable amounts. So I don't want to put a limit on what they can, what the private sector can bring in. It is a 50-50. I made sure that it was 50-50, that it's not us trying to cover additional above and beyond. And I've had people from the private sector came in and said, hey, you know what? You guys need that. Maybe you guys should bring in a little bit more. And I said, no, we're going to make this even. So I didn't put a cap because I don't want to put a limit on what the private sector might be able to approach us with. That being said, I do believe, though, we're not going to find, from the conversations that I've had, $500,000 seems to be what they continue to throw out. I don't see this as something that's a multi-million dollar, especially in the first couple years type program. We do come back in a couple years and look at it again. There is a sunset date, and it gives us an opportunity to come back and say, hey, is this too much money? Is it working at all? Or is this something we want to continue with? So we did put that piece in there so that it's not perpetuality, and we could see this being money that goes on for a certain period of time.
Through the chair, final question. So there are organizations and others working on this issue. Is there a piece in here that requires a coordination of efforts or an identification of what's going on right now so that we're not duplicating, or maybe we're piggybacking on something that is working or is seeming to work? Is there something in here that would allow for that?
There's nothing in there. Nothing in here specifically that says what's out there. Let's not duplicate. I'll admit, I, if there's something out there on ANWR that's being done on a national scale, I'm not aware of it, to tell you the truth. Maybe there is, but there's nothing in here that says if there's something out there on a national scale, let's make sure we don't duplicate that particular process. I just think that's because it's just not something taking place.
Thank you.
I just had just one observation. It says before on page 1, lines 13 to 14, before the contract is executed and the advertising plan must be approved by the department. I appreciate that. There has to be a direct ownership, and the governor, he or she, can't say, I didn't have anything to do with this. I like that responsibility that's tied into that. So it's an observation. Representative Newman and then Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pruitt. My first thought is you get to be the first guy who comes in front of this body after we just got done talking about increases in the operating budget. So when I'm trying to figure out the component in the financing on this, and it's always subject to appropriation. So does the Department of Commerce and Community and Economic Development go out and try and solicit funds? Is this a mechanism that creates a fund, or what that industry puts money into, and then DCCED comes to the legislature and says, you know, Joe Pruitt Oil Company put $50 million into this fund, you know, so the state has to put $50 million into it. I'm trying to figure out how that works.
Representative Newman, through the chair, it's modeled after the tourism, which I know you guys have seen, and it's basically right along the same venue. There's not really a fund that the Department of Commerce has and holds on to. It would be, and this is my understanding, is that the trade association would approach the Department of Commerce with X amount of dollars. That we would then, of course, like you mentioned, we would then appropriate up to the 50% match there. It's not necessarily a fund that Department of Commerce is going out there and gathering the money. It is the trade association that approaches them with, hey, we've got X amount. And then it's, of course, on our responsibility as a legislature to then appropriate accordingly so that Department of Commerce can then work with them to have the marketing campaign go off.
Follow-up. Richard Newman.
So, Representative Pruitt, so the state, the part DCCED, I hate acronyms, Department of Commerce, would enter into a contract with a qualified trade association. A qualified trade association would go out and try and get people or companies to put money into an account for lobbying for ANWR, and then they would bring that back to the legislature asking for matching money for that?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, and I'll make a quick correction. This is a marketing campaign. It's not lobbying. I do want to make sure that that's very clearly stated. Yes, what they would do is they would go to, whether it's their membership or people that are involved with the industry, and they would ask them, say, what money can you give? Maybe they want to appropriate from their own money. Maybe they want to say, hey, we've got X in our account. We want to put X towards it. And, of course, that would probably be approval on their board or whatever it would be. So they're going to be the one gathering it from whatever sources they feel that they need to. That's why it's on them. It's not something that the state has something to do with. And they'll then, of course, bring that money forward, so which you would then use to market and correctly communicate the ANWR to the
I'd just like to announce before we go too far, Mr. Michelle will be bringing donuts, but I'll be buying.
just a follow-up. Thank you for the donuts there, both of you. And again, I'm just trying to get this in my mind so that the state enters into a contract or finds a qualified trader. And says, they have to put together their organization then, which goes out to try and get some money, comes back. And then I do have concerns about a limit. Again, just because of budgetary reasons. You mentioned $50 million, and you'd love to have $50 million to go out and get an advertising campaign for opening ANWR I would like to see some limits as to what the state's obligation is on this. I think that we need that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I don't think the $50 million, I think that was a speculative number, and I would hate for that to be the number reported, and that the number would be subject to appropriation, and I think that would be the defining.
Sure, that was kind of part of my question, is if there's an X amount of money goes into this account and it's subject to appropriation and the state doesn't match that as a 50% appropriation, then what?
I'll respond to that through the chair, Representative Newman. You know, I mean, really, at that point, I mean, that's really up to us. They can still go forward with it, and it's just a choice that we would make. We've told them that we would go up to at least 50%, and it's if we don't,
not to at least. Yeah, I mean up to.
Sorry, up to 50%, and if we don't, I mean it can still go forward. It doesn't. We are not necessarily required to go up to it, but you know it is a good faith. We are putting in here good faith, and if you guys choose to you know, raise the money, that we'll go ahead and match it. And that could be something that they discussed with the Department of Commerce as well. It's, you know, here's what we've got. The Department of Commerce can have a communication, or we could indicate how much that we are willing to appropriate, and they can make sure that they only put forward the amount that we feel willing that we can will appropriate that year too. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your enthusiasm for this. And I appreciate the way you've got this structured, because somebody, I don't remember who it was, wanted to change the way we finance our part of the tourism budget in the same way. Gee, I can't remember. But can you give me an idea of how long we've been putting money into the ANWR?
Arctic Power?
Yeah, Arctic Power, I guess. Right, Arctic Power, and how much we put in there? Do we know?
Through the chair, Representative Duke, I don't know the exact amount. One of the things that I will clarify between Arctic Power, and of course this, you know, $160,000 is about what we're putting in these days. Arctic Power is on the ground, boots on the ground, talking to the people on Capitol Hill. What we're trying to do here is really touch the people outside that are not on Capitol Hill. The people like Mr. Herreras and those that are with Arctic Power, and of course our delegation in Congress, they're touching the people that are going to make the decisions. We're trying to get out and communicate to the people that elect those individuals and make sure that so it's really to give our delegation some backup, so that when those people go back to their communities, they won't have people frustrated with them for making a decision that they believe was improper. So it's a little separation from what Arctic Power does, but I do not have the number that we put into Arctic Power. I apologize at this point in time. We'd probably find that if you
could. I'd appreciate it if you could, Mr. Chairman, if I can continue. Thank you. One of the reasons that I'm interested in that is I've started crabbing around here about fiscal notes that are indeterminate. And here's another. I would like it a lot better if you could just make a projection. You know, it's not the sort of thing that anybody's going to hold you to, because, you know, everybody recognizes that the future is unknowable. But, you know, in a situation like this one, you're essentially asking for a blank check, and we just don't have any idea how much that blank check is going to be. You know, I mean, people have been throwing for, you know, $50 million figures around, and I don't suppose anybody really thinks it's going to be that, but the price of poker could go way up, and you know, I don't think I've finally gotten to the point where I just don't think that I'm being a responsible member of the legislature and just sort of rubber stamping these indeterminate fiscal notes when they come through. So, like I say, I appreciate your enthusiasm. I'm going to go ahead. I don't know exactly how I'm going to mark up, you know, but I'm going to question.
I'll just interject. I think there's two significant concerns. My initial reaction was to try to see if this was there's a will to move it on, but I'd like to address the bar in any, just making that clear and political. And I think it's not unreasonable to put a limit here. We need to know some parameters. And I think there's some of our most aggressive, I think, funding of Arctic Power and ANWR efforts was about $1.5 million. I mean, during a pitched battle in the late 80s, early 90s. And that was I think Sam Cotton and Mike Navarre were the big advocates of that. And Mike, that shows, you know, it's a bipartisan issue. It's I think that was an appropriation. Back then, that's been about two decades. Pardon? It was $5 million.
Yeah, it was much bigger than that.
Okay, that's. But I think our most, and I think it's reasonable to put a limit on this. You know, it's because we let's work together. Let's figure out that. I'd like to get this back and see it. CS form, and I'd rather do that than trying to do this on the floor, because I think there's enough
there's enough concern across all parts of this little horseshoe. I just want to let you know in advance. It's not quite ready for prime time, well, but it can be with some adjustments. Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I got to say, I'm not trying to block this at all.
No, I think I'm slowing it down as much as you are.
Yeah, it's just that, you know, I'm just sort of getting tired of these fiscal notes that aren't really fiscal notes. They don't really tell you anything. You know, and if it goes above whatever it is we put on this piece of paper, good. You know,
Revisit that in the budget process.
Absolutely. So I appreciate the fact that we're going to at least make an attempt here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And then that wouldn't be actually necessarily the amount. That would be the more of an allocation than the authorization, and then it wouldn't necessarily be the amount. And you hope for the, but we'll work that out in conversation. Representative Fairclough and then Kara, I believe?
No.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One, I wanted to put on the record that there's also a letter of support in from the Teamsters Local 959, so there could be all kinds of different qualified trade organizations that might want to move a message forward. I wanted to go on record saying I would appreciate a limit or an amount so that there's a real number. I think that's encouraging. I'm wondering whether it'll qualify for a film tax credit. Because it's money coming from if it's money coming from the private sector, it could qualify for multiple things, especially since it's advertising Alaska in a way that we want it to advertise Alaska. So I don't mean that tongue in cheek. I mean that. I
wouldn't expect it to win anything at the Sundance Festival.
pretty tough hit deal there.
I think you should shoot for the Anchorage Film Festival first.
Anyway, just trying to help Senator Ellis here. I do have a little bit of concern in that an outside organization is going to craft a message that I like the idea that we're, as of the administration, would give the yes vote for that message to go forward. But here's the dilemma. We have an organization with boots on the ground, Arctic Power, and you can have different opinions on that, but as a person who traveled on behalf of at least the majority to Washington, D.C. in early March to see what they were trying to do in keeping track of congressmen and women and senators, one person, that's next to impossible. So that office is very small. We're getting a huge bang for our buck. There is a board of directors in place that oversees what their staff, Mr. Herrera, is doing on our behalf every day. And so we know how many people are following us here in Juneau. To have a federal delegation following over one person following over 400 people's political views and thinking that we're really getting our arms around that delegation in the federal government, I just don't think that's happening with one person. So this is the conflict for me. We have Arctic Power, who has the boots on the ground, and they are trying to keep track of what people have in the form of factual information about Alaska. And what I found when I was there, and Representative Pruitt and I were in offices together, we were on the same team at many different meetings, and the porcupine herd and the central herd were definitely areas of understanding that people had no idea about. Absolutely, people, staff members didn't know about Alaskans overwhelmingly supporting the opening of ANWR in a responsible manner yet. And they didn't know even what the geographic region looked like. They were thinking that it was a polar bear on a little piece of ice, you know, an image that people choose to market Alaska with, or pristine mountains and lakes and rivers and streams versus a coastal plain with a piece of ice over the top of it. And so Arctic Power and Mr. Herrera understand who knows what, or as best they can. And so for me, there needs to be some kind of coordination with the message, because how are we being consistent in delivering the right message? People focus from a marketing perspective on different issues. Some might say that as the oil industry is out on behalf of of their shareholders, trying to return a better bottom line, that they're marketing to the marketing campaign currently going on about ACEs and the whole oil and tax may be targeted at the wrong people. They're targeted at the friendlies, per se, or the people that understand the issue and really want additional oil production. But if there are people, we don't know why people are opposing that. We hear sound bites that say they oppose it because it's some big giveaway. So if people are really concerned financially, we're not having that conversation that we're in trouble financially, that we know that the road is starting to narrow and that production is causing us here in House Finance and hopefully around the building to say, will we have enough money in FY14 that our revenue coming in is going to meet the expenses that we're seeing brought to us each day? And so, again, who are we marketing to? And I have faith in the department, but I just know who has boots on the ground. And so back to the bill that's before us, I just wonder how we merge those together so that we get the most bang for our buck. And I am supportive of an advertising campaign. I am supportive of putting money to the table, but it should be a consolidated effort so that we have that Arctic Power Board somehow in there, because they've been trying to manage the best of both worlds for us for some time. And, you know, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the latitude. One final comment is I noticed that 41 senators who voted in one of the articles I read that it was a landslide failure or something like that, and I didn't see it like that at all. 41 people put their neck out and said that they wanted some kind of development and they were worried about something. I don't want to categorize why they voted or, you know, that was their business, but, you know, if you're only going, if 51 is really a majority, then we were 10 people away from a majority. That was a big move, and for the Senate to even take up the issue at a federal level was a big thing for Alaska, and it had a lot to do with people going there and talking about that now. So I think we're prime time to advertise, and I am thankful. I'm not recalling the senator who moved the amendment forward. Roberts. I'm thankful for him to put the issue out there so that as a country we could actually talk about the issue instead of the soundbite. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to be supporting the bill, but I'm just a little skeptical, to be just very candid, about what this is going to produce in the end. It just seems to me that for us to advance the message, you know, in a holistic way, not just like ASMEA is targeting certain segments of South Carolina or California or whatever, it's going to take a broad-scale message. And the only way that that message, I think, is going to be delivered is if we do something right. I off the coast with some of the activity that Shell Oil might be doing or something like that, because, you know, my perception is that Alaska is viewed nationally as the last bastion of the wilderness, if you will, and Anwar is the mantra for NGOs that have got gazillions of dollars that will dwarf any amount of money that we could put forward. And so to me, I'm going to be supporting this, but I'm just kind of dubious about what it's actually going to achieve, assuming this does go into place. And I do have a couple of technical questions, Representative Pruitt. I think I'll talk with you afterwards about the bill. And I'll close by saying that I will support it.
I appreciate the effort coming forward, and we will try to flesh out something we can, that it's a better bill when it gets to the floor. This is an issue. I don't think we're in a good position just having the oil industry be the spokesman for Alaska. We have different issues. We have different priorities. We put on revenue sharing issues that we have different priorities on a lot of it. And I think it's appropriate for us to speak as a state and our aligned people that on this is a state policy issue. And I'm not, the oil company are our business partners in many ways, but I prefer Alaskans speaking as on this issue and sending a message from Alaska, and certainly can be cooperative with the industry, but it should be Alaskans' voice, and that's an important dynamic in here. We have a general alignment that we want to have more oil production, and
ability, but we don't have a straight deadline. Some things that won't get mentioned as a priority if it's Alaska's voice isn't there. And, but we will, or Mr. Michelle, is at your disposal to Representative Guerra. You've had some issues with Representative Pruitt and Joe Michelle, and we'll work on seeing if there's a getting some type of a reasonable cap, and that's not one we would necessarily ever fully fund, but we know some parameters. I think that's an appropriate step for this committee to know. I don't like those little asterisks, the indeterminate either. So, with that, we will adjourn until reconvening at 1:30, I believe. Take up HCR 23, and we're going to try to move out a couple of the bills that have CSs, 170 and HCR 24. I think everybody has had those CSs delivered to them. It's the tax exemption for volunteer firemen and the resolution on food policy. So with that, we are adjourned until 1:30.